on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes as we discuss the latest happenings around the New York Giants. We will get to some newsworthy items off the top here as the Giants did make a few transactions yesterday. We will continue to preview the upcoming regular season matchups, correct?
I like the way you say that.
Indeed. Well, it's nice to actually have a transaction.
Like they're a banking system. The Giants made some transactions.
Yes.
Yeah,
some newsworthy items.
Yes,
so we will
yes.
delve into that and also continue our preview of regular season matchups as the Giants will be going up against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers during the course of this season. That matchup will be November 8th. They will visit the Bucs. It'll be a 4:05 p.m. Eastern kickoff, so we will hear from Jenna Lane, who covers the team for Sports Talk Florida, 10:40 a.m. in Tampa. So stay tuned for that. And we'll get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513. You can also use hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. So let's start with the two news items related to the Giants. They waived a pair of players, and then they also signed a new player. They brought in safety Jeremy Miles, who spent the last two seasons with the Baltimore Ravens. Now, Steve Spagnuolo was his positional coach last season, similar to Shockey Brown. So now you have two players that Spags coached last season with Baltimore that are now members of the Giants secondary. To make room for Jeremy Miles on the roster, they injured waived wide receiver Marcus Harris, who goes by the nickname of Soup, who had a great preseason last year. Unfortunately, he suffered a hip injury right as they were finalizing the 53-man roster, and he was put on IR. The goal was he was going to come back this season, be ready to go, and be in the mix at wide receiver. NJ Advanced Media is reporting, according to their conversations with Marcus Harris, that he recently underwent microfracture surgery on his knee following minicamp. So as a result, he is going to be out for the season. If he goes through waivers unclaimed, there is a chance that the Giants could bring him back and put him on IR. So that's not necessarily out of the picture. The other player that they just waived was Justin Curry, who was a safety, undrafted out of Western Michigan, who actually looked very good during the course of minicamp and OTAs. But obviously they're bringing in a more veteran safety by the likes of Jeremy Miles, who also, I should mention, has some connections to Giants, as Victor Cruz and Julian Talley both played with him at UMass. So there's a number of connections within the Giants organization. There's connections to Spags. And this is going to, Anita, add some additional depth at the safety position, which we've talked a great deal at length about over the course of the offseason. It's a young group. There's not a lot of veterans. You know, this is somebody that has an opportunity to come in, is familiar with Spags, is familiar with his defensive system, and who knows, could create and carve out a niche for himself here.
You know, it's interesting. The majority of the time that we talk about professional athletes who come on board for a team, an organization that knows a coordinator's system is typically a quarterback, right? Or somebody on the offensive side of the ball. You know, how often do we talk about, well, this player knows this defensive coordinator's kind of game plan? Not as often as we do offense. So, you know, I would love to sit down with if chance I run into Spags and kind of get an idea. You know, like, for example, the team just down the way, you've got the Jets. A lot of people feel that Geno Smith is going to be the starting quarterback for them, but you've got Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's coming in, who is supposedly been given an opportunity to compete for the starting job, and he knows Chan Gailey's system like nobody's business. Well, obviously that's going to benefit him in a huge way for this competition, even though many feel that Geno Smith is the better athlete. Who's to know if he's the better quarterback? Only time will tell. But nonetheless, you know, I think it's a very interesting dynamic when you talk about a defensive player coming in, knowing a defensive coordinator's game plan. How helpful will that be to him compared to, let's say, an offensive player? So I do think it's going to be helpful in one way, shape, or form. How helpful? I don't know. And also, I'm curious, like, you know, he comes in. Is he going to be given the opportunity to compete for that other safety spot?
Well, that obviously remains to be seen. I mean, at this point, I don't think there's a definitive depth chart in place. Landon Collins and Cooper Taylor, Anita, as you know, got most of the first team reps during OTAs and minicamp. Nat Burhe was limited due to the calf injury. Bennett Jackson is making the transition to safety. We saw Justin Curry there. He was just waived. We also saw Josh Gordy, another veteran who has connections to Spags based on his days with the St. Louis Rams. So if there is one trend, though, and you just alluded to this, Anita, that we can take away from just the safety group here with the Giants since Spags was brought back in, he brought in Josh Gordy, who he knows and has some history with him. George Selvey also has some history with Spags with the St. Louis Rams organization. Now we're adding Jeremy Miles into the mix. Shockey Brown was already with the Giants before Spags even came into the fold because he joined the team late last season. But I think it does help any coordinator, whether it be on offense or defense, just to have familiarity with some of the players because they understand what your goal is and ultimately what you're hoping to achieve within the system. They may not be every down players. They may not be starters, but I think it's important to have those type of compliments on your roster in the event somebody gets banged up. Or if you want to run certain packages, you understand you have faith in those players. You can throw them out there, and they understand what the task at hand is all about. The other thing that's important to mention about Jeremy Miles, he's got a good background in special teams play. And the Giants are looking to bolster that facet of their team. You look at a number of the free agents that they brought in. You know, we focus on Dwayne Harris as a return man, but he's also good in coverage. JT Thomas and Jonathan Casillas, you know, let's not also overlook their value and need as special teams players. Obviously, they're hoping to create opportunities for themselves as linebackers, but, you know, a lot of players on this team can serve dual threats, and I think Jeremy Miles is the latest player that they've brought in. He's not just known as a defensive player. He's also somebody that can help out on special teams as well.
Yeah, and let's face it, you know, the Giants haven't been that successful in the special teams department in quite a while. And I think this is the year that really they by bringing in Harris, I think this is a year that they're really committing to upping that dimension of their football team. And a lot of times I know that, you know, listen, we focus on offense. We focus on defense. A number of times I don't think enough is really spoken about special teams. And I'm actually quite excited to see that the Giants are taking a step forward and improving that area of their game.
And there's a number of young guys that contributed on special teams over the last few years. You look at what Nat Burhe did on special teams last season, Devon Kennard. I think DeMontre Moore has made strides on special teams, has to eliminate some of the mental lapses at times that force penalties, but he certainly has been an impactful player. And then you have your core veterans, Zach Diossi. You also have Mark Herzlich. But to add players like a Jeremy Miles, to add a Jeremy Davis, for example, you know, they're trying to build a young nucleus that they can build upon moving forward so that they have a core on special teams, and at the same time, these players also fill out the depth chart on offense and on defense. That seems to at least be the game plan over the last few seasons. Let's open up the phone lines. Want to try to squeeze in a few calls before we are joined by Jenna Lane, who will talk Tampa Bay Buccaneers with us in a little bit. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Christian gets us going in New York. Christian, welcome aboard. What do you have for us?
Hey, I wanted to talk a bit about Jeremy Davis.
Sure.
I think he was a bit of a steal in the sixth round because no disrespect, but there was some terrible quarterback play at UConn this year. And it was a little bit better last year when he had an 1,000-yard season. And so I really think he could be a legitimate wide receiver. And some people want to knock his 40 time, but I mean, the guys that love football have better game speed than track speed. And he seems to have that passion to him where he might be a little quicker in a game compared to when people want to measure his 40 time.
Well, they used him as a vertical threat at UConn last season. You mentioned his numbers, and you mentioned the inconsistency in terms of quarterback play. But, you know, even though he may not be known as a real fast guy, they utilized him as a guy that could certainly stretch the field. And in terms of his opportunities as a wide receiver in year number one with the Giants, Christian, I think you also need to take a look at the depth chart. And I don't think it's anything reflecting on Jeremy Davis's play. It's just I don't know if he's going to have a great deal of opportunities given the fact that you know who the top three guys are. Then you take into consideration perhaps Dwayne Harris can create some opportunities for himself. Let's not forget about Corey Washington. He's been having a very strong OTA mini camp session which he'll look to continue during training camp. It's a numbers game. I'm not so sure if he's going to have an opportunity to make a big impact. I see him more as a special teams guy that can make a name for himself as opposed to perhaps a wide receiver, at least in year number one with the Giants.
Oh, for sure. Year number one, he's going to be a solid special teamer, but he could be a nice possession receiver of the future if things don't work out with Randall long term. And the guy has real good hands. So he's the type of guy you want going over the middle, catching in traffic, and he's got the size and toughness to do that. So he seems like a nice over-the-middle guy for the future.
You should be an agent.
You know what? I would love to be
you're
an
like,
agent
you're
one
selling,
day.
You're selling me on him.
Yeah, I would love that one day. I'd love to have a career in football. But, yeah, I love Jeremy Davis. He seems real solid, and he's got that character where he's just going to work.
I would agree with you. I think the last thing that you hit on is important to note. You know, hearing him interact with the media and talking with him and realizing that he understands, okay, listen, I was a wide receiver in college, and I happened to be one of the go-to guys. Now, all of a sudden, I'm not necessarily at the top of the depth chart, and I know the best way that I can make an impact on this team is through special teams, and he seems to be welcoming that opportunity. And as you know, Christian, most young players who come into the league, they need to adjust not just from college to the pros, but also adjust to being a prolific player on offense to all of a sudden perhaps now being a complementary player who may contribute mostly on special teams, and he seems to be open to that. And I think that's important for a lot of late-round picks that come into the NFL through the draft. And he seems to have a very open mind with regarding that situation.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just real excited about him long-term. But, I mean, this year it's a bit crowded. So, I mean, I expect him to be making special teams tackles and mostly contribute that way.
And they're going to need him in that department, Christian. I appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. Because if you look at the wide receiver core, and a number of you weighed in on this earlier this week, I think even somebody asked about, you know, the role that Odell Beckham may have on special teams this season, given the fact that they brought in Dwayne Harris. And my answer is, you know, he's going to be having opportunities here or there, but I don't think they're penciling him in as a primary target on special teams because I think they have other guys that they can rely on, and they want to make sure that they can utilize him and preserve him on offense. So that's where players like Jeremy Davis need to step up and take advantage of their opportunities in need, and some of the other wide receivers. Even a guy like Corey Washington, as impressive as he's looked during the course of the offseason, remember, he still needs to carve out a role for himself on special teams. That's priority number one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're not a number one or number two wide receiver in this offense, you know, Tom Coughlin says you've got to play special teams. And for a number of the guys that you know, that we're looking at that 5-6 wide receiver spot competing to try to make, because I think there'll be 6 wide receivers on this roster, that's 6-7 competing. If you really, you know, show out on special teams, that might get you the nod over another guy to kind of make that cut heading into the regular season. And you mentioned Odell Beckham Jr. Quick, you know, congratulations. He won best play with, of course, that grab on the ESPYs last night. So that was really awesome. And representing the Giants really well. Did you see him in his red suit?
I did indeed. More hardware coming his way, which is no surprise.
Styling, profiling, repping the Giants.
Absolutely.
He's been one busy bee.
He has been.
This offseason.
He has been circulating throughout the course of the country, given all of these award shows and the name that he made for himself in year number one. Mm-hmm. And speaking of the receiving corps, we'll get into a little bit more of the depth chart and how it may look now that Marcus Harris is no longer in the mix, at least in terms of being a healthy option. But before we get into that, we are now joined by Jenna Lane, who covers the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for Sports Talk Florida, 10:40 a.m., also a correspondent for Fox Sports 1 as we continue to preview the Giants' regular season matchups. Jenna, Lance Meadow, Anita Marks with you here on Giants.com. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Oh, everything's great. Just, wow, I can't believe it. As far as, you know, training camp, it's right around the corner. We've got, 2 weeks until guys report? Time has flown by, I tell you. All of a sudden, I'm like, wow, I think I got a last-minute vacation I need to take or something. Got to use up those days before camp.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Myself and Lance, we talk about it all the time. It's just the summer's flown by. All right, so let's start breaking it down. As we know, the Giants take on Tampa at Tampa November 8th. That should be a fun one. It's a 4 p.m. game. I guess obviously the biggest storyline for the Tampa Bay Bucks is the fact that you got a new rookie quarterback in Jameis Winston. I'm hearing that he has impressed a lot of the veterans throughout OTAs in the mini camps. I'm also hearing that he needs to lose weight. So kind of fill us in where Jameis Winston is right now and how he's looked since he's been drafted by the Bucks.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, I think the weight conversation, I mean, that's nothing new. I mean, we even talked about that before the draft even happened. I remember, you know, you saw images at his FSU Pro Day when it was on NFL Network, and you saw him getting weighed in, and he had his shirt off. And so I think that that's kind of generally accepted that, okay, he's not a quote-unquote body guy. And a lot of scouts have said that, so that's understandable. But it's really encouraging the fact that, and he posted a picture on social media very recently. He's standing with, and both of these guys look pretty ripped with their shirts off, Lewis Murphy and Mike Evans. Granted, Winston didn't have a shirt off, but I think he looked pretty trim. I mean, you always kind of have to watch out for that midsection. But just the fact that he's getting in the extra work right now, I think, is encouraging.
We all have to watch that midsection, Jenna. We all have to watch that
Gosh, don't we? You know what? I just turned 30, and so I'm even seeing a little bit of that myself, too. But you know what? As a rookie, it is important that you see guys putting in the extra work, and especially a guy like him where, you know what, he walked around at FSU and very clearly – you know, he was the man at FSU with the success that he had out on the football field. But you know what? He also earned a lot of the trust and the respect of his teammates because he would put in some extra work. So I thought that that was encouraging. But, you know, that's obviously something he's going to have to watch throughout his career. And he's also noted, too, the fact that he played baseball in his off season at Florida State. So he never had a true off season, and that leads me to believe he never really had somebody really teaching him about nutrition and things like that. Now that football is the sole focus, and there are a lot of guys that are on the team that are like this, that do take their nutrition very seriously. You know, now that he has some time to make football the sole focus, he can focus on his diet and really learning about nutrition and how to properly fuel his body.
Jenna, a rookie quarterback's best friend can be a running game as well as a consistent offensive line. And as you know from covering the team, offensive line play very up and down last season. The team gave up over 50 sacks. Obviously, there was also inconsistency at the quarterback position. What is the status of the offensive line? That has been an area that they've been looking to address over the last few seasons. And obviously, it's going to dictate the tone in terms of the effectiveness of Jameis Winston. So how does the offensive line look thus far during the course of offseason workouts?
Well, I just interviewed one of a second-year offensive tackle in Kevin Pamphiel yesterday, and they understand, of course, the responsibility of protecting a rookie quarterback. And two, it's been a point of emphasis, the offensive line, the last two drafts. They drafted two offensive linemen last year, and then this year they took two of them, actually, in the second round. They got an offensive tackle in Donovan Smith out of Penn State, and then they also took a guard in Ali Marpet. So, and there's a possibility that both of those rookies could start. So a rookie left tackle, you know, I got to say, though, regardless of who they put there, I think anything is an upgrade over what we saw out of Anthony Collins last year. That was a really big disappointment. As much as people want to point to Josh McCown, and he made some really uncharacteristic mistakes for a veteran, with what we saw out of Collins, I have to say that was an even bigger disappointment. And it ended up being where he was a healthy scratch towards the end of the season. They brought their right tackle, Damar Dotson, over there. He had never played left tackle before in his life, and they brought him over there. They lined him up against, you know, guys like Julius Peppers. I mean, talk about, you know, if you're going to have your first start at left tackle, my gosh, having to face a guy like that and Clay Matthews, that's really tough. But that just goes to show you how bad the offensive line was last year. But, you know, they also expect Logan Mankins to be a lot healthier. They have an offseason with him. And also, too, giving him an offseason with some of these younger guys. Because regardless of who starts, it's still a really, really young group, but they're hoping that those guys can all kind of gel and mesh together. And also, interesting to note, you know, the team went after Dan Connolly, who just announced his retirement today on ESPN. And that was a guy they had brought in. He used to line up opposite Logan Mankins up in New England. That was a guy they were kind of hoping could really help solidify that interior, but instead he chose retirement. So again, they understand they've had a lot of rebuilding to do on the offensive line, but you're absolutely right. Between protecting the quarterback last year and then that run game, I mean, Doug Martin, you know, was really just a shadow of his former self last year, and a lot of it had to do with not really having ample rushing opportunities. So they're expecting a lot more out of those guys this year.
And Jenna Lane joining us. I want to give her a shout out with her Twitter account. If you want to follow Jameis Winston and the Bucks this season, that's at Jenna Lane Bucks. Let's talk about Jameis's weapons this year. Mike Evans, last year was the year of the wide receivers. I know it took a hot second for Mike Evans to kind of really show all that he can do, but man, when he did, it was pretty impressive. Vincent Jackson, I'm reading that he's going to spend some time in the slot position this year. I know a lot of people don't know a lot about Lewis Murphy because he spent all his time in Oakland, and who watches the Raiders? No one I know. So, I mean, talk about this wide receiving core and also how I know Tim Wright now is back with the team. You've got some depth and some talent at the tight end position. How are all these weapons going to come together for Jameis?
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, between adding Dirk Koetter as the new offensive coordinator, you saw what he did with the Atlanta Falcons. And then before that, you saw what he did with Jacksonville. Really, I know the folks at One Buck are really excited about what he's able to do with this offense, and you've got a lot deeper receiving core this year. Vincent lined up in the slot a little bit last year, and, you know, just the idea of creating some of those mismatches, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, do you keep your DBs where they're at, or do you move one of your outside guys on the inside to be able to deal with him? And he's a big mismatch. I mean, he's a 6'5 guy. And then, of course, you've also got Mike Evans, too, which you're going to be seeing, I think, Evans lining up a lot more on you know, different parts of the field too. Before he came to the Bucs last year, he hadn't even run a full route tree at Texas A&M. He lined up on one side of the field. And you could even see that in the preseason. He was holding the ball with the wrong hand, and he actually had a forced fumble. It was Brent Grimes against the Dolphins. And so, but now that he really has a better understanding of just, you know, an NFL offense and this particular offense, again, he's expected to do a lot more. Not marred by a hamstring injury, and that kind of cost him a little bit last year. So he's feeling a lot better. He's also another guy that's really learned how to take care of his body a little bit more. As far as Lewis goes, you know, his season ended a little early last year with an injury, but it spoke volumes about him and the type of work that he puts in and what he means to that receiving group by them signing him to a long-term deal. So when he's a local product, he's got a lot of speed. Yeah, he had some injuries and was kind of a journeyman, but, you know, they're excited, too, about the leadership that he brings. Because aside from Vince Jackson, you've got a really, really young group. So he's the type of guy that comes to work every day. You know, you never have to worry about him off the field. My gosh, he's so active in the community. I was actually just talking to him before I got on the phone with you guys because he's planning another charity football camp. Again, he's really, really active in this local community. So, but then of course, you know, you're counting on guys like him to lead the way for Kenny Bell, a rookie receiver, and then also too Kalen Clay. Both those guys are also potential kick return weapons. But, you know, with Bell, Nebraska guy, you know, whether it's blocking downfield or talk about speed, he can really stretch these defenses. He's going to be one to watch, I think, with this team as well, because you've got the big guys in Vincent Jackson and Mike Evans, but you don't necessarily have that speedster. And he's a guy that can line up on the outside and, again, really, really stretch a defense. So he's going to be one to watch. And then Tim Wright, too. I know that he was at H-back when he was up in New England, and he did that with the Bucs too, under the previous offensive coordinator. So, you know, they're excited about what he brings. I know previously they were looking for more of that complete tight end, the guy who, you know, could be more of that blocker as well. But, you know, I think that they really could use a receiving weapon in that category, too. And they had some injuries in that department last year. So a lot of weapons for Winston this year. They're giving them a lot of guys to work with.
Jenna, you alluded to the fact that obviously they have a new offensive coordinator in Dirk Koetter. And it's interesting because he comes over from an Atlanta team that, yes, had Matt Ryan and a plethora of wide receivers, but also struggled to run the football itself because they also had some offensive line issues. How do you see the offense evolving and changing this season with Dirk Koetter now running things, especially since, you know, they had some issues at offensive coordinator last season because of the health of one of their coaches and so forth? How is his stability perhaps a step in the right direction for this team?
Well, I mean, I think considering, too, and one thing I would go back to is that in Jacksonville, Koetter's offense looked a lot different. You know, he had Maurice Jones-Drew, and, you know, they were also able to get a lot more out of David Girard than I think anybody expected. And so with that, you know, one thing I like about Koetter, and I've heard this a lot being mentioned about him, is the fact that he can really mold whatever skill set, whatever talents he's got in his room, he can mold his offense around that. In the case of Atlanta, yeah, they struggled to run the football, and they also had to even evolve their passing game because protection was so poor. But, you know, based on that, the fact that, you know, whether it's, you know, 5-step drops or 3-step drops with Matt Ryan, they were able to still somewhat be productive. And you also got to look at the fact that they had Devin Hester. He was never an offensive factor in Chicago, and he became an offensive weapon for them in Atlanta last year. So there's a lot of things they're excited about. But, you know, as far as, you know, what we saw last year with Jeff Tedford, it was such an abbreviated version of what Tedford was really trying to do. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that he was out the whole year. He had that heart surgery, and so you had a first-time offensive coordinator calling the plays. You know, you still could maybe see empty backfields. I think an emphasis on still getting some of these running backs in space, I still think you'll see that. But I think that's kind of a natural trend that you're seeing with football in general, now that you're seeing a little bit more spread, just being incorporated here and there in the NFL. So, but more so, I think there's going to be a greater emphasis on having that vertical passing game. And it lends itself, too, to what Winston does so well. And, too, one thing I know you're definitely going to be seeing a lot of, and you saw it at Florida State with Winston, but just being able to capitalize on having those big receiving targets. Winston had that with Kelvin Benjamin at Florida State, a big red zone target. And now he's got two of them with Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson and even Austin Seferian Jenkins. So just using those big bodies with those big catch radiuses, that's going to be tough on opposing defenses, and they're hoping that'll work in their favor.
You really quick before we do transition over to the defense, just out of curiosity, you know, last year there was a lot of talk about Bobby Rainey, that this was Lovie's guy, that he was going to kind of, you know, take the reins, no pun intended, in that backfield. How do you see his relationship with Doug Martin, Sims, James? I mean, there's a lot of talent in that backfield, but is this the year for Rainey?
Well, I think a lot of that is going to be up to him in terms of, and I got to give him a lot of credit because, you know, last year he went from, you know, some games he was the primary ball carrier. And then, you know, maybe when Doug Martin was the guy that was getting the start, then you saw Rainey move over to punt returns. I mean, he was being thrust in a lot of different directions. He was active some games. So his big issue, and we saw this last year, is ball security. He had some really costly fumbles. I know one in particular against Atlanta. And I remember, you know, the running backs coach was definitely in his ear about that and just really trying to emphasize that. So if he can show some ball security, it'll definitely be helpful. A lot of that's going to depend on the offensive line. And two, I think, you know, Doug Martin, they're still wondering if he can be the guy that he was his rookie season when he had, 2,000 all-purpose yards. And two, Charles Sims, you know, there was they really like his hands. And so he's another guy, again, I think he looks better in space versus necessarily, you know, running inside in between the tackles. But you know, they've got high hopes for him and what they can do with him in the short passing game. So I like Rainey, though. Again, you know, it's he also had a key block against the Falcons, I'll say that. But I think a lot of it's just going to depend on who can be that complete package guy.
Talking with Jenna Lane, who covers the Bucs for Sports Talk Florida, 1040 AM, also a correspondent for Fox Sports 1. Moving over to defense, Jenna, last season they were very aggressive in bringing in some notable names, Alteron Verner, Michael Johnson, and obviously it didn't work out. If you look at the stats and the numbers, Michael Johnson no longer with the team, Verner is. When you are to look at the identity of this defense now moving forward, how would you describe what their ultimate goal is this season in trying to set the tone and trying to get back to respectability, which the Bucs defense was known for quite some years when they were even Super Bowl contenders?
Well, I think you don't have to look too far for that inspiration because, you know, and especially in this market where the Tampa 2 was created, you know, it's basically the same type of system you saw back when they played in 2002, and Smith was here back when he was a linebackers coach under Tony Dungy, and that's all guys flying to the ball. It's a bend but don't break defense, and you have to have that pass rush. That was key. It all starts up front, and you had that menacing pass rush in the days of Warren Sapp and you know, Booger McFarland was there. I mean, you had Simeon Rice. You had those guys that were really dominating up front, and it wasn't there last year. And I know that a lot of people were really disappointed with what they saw in Michael Johnson last year. I know he had some injuries, and scheme-wise, it just between scheme and coaching, it wasn't a good fit for really either party. But, you know, they're hoping to get that back this year, and it's really interesting in who they did bring in. They brought in George Johnson, who, you know, a journeyman player in his own right. And, you know, last year, even though he wasn't a starter in Detroit, he had 6 sacks. And then you've got Jaquie Smith, who was an undrafted free agent out of Missouri. No idea how that guy got overlooked, but last year he had a big year for the Bucs, earned his way into a starting role as a left defensive end. they're going to try him as at right defensive end, see if maybe he can be that dominant edge rusher. He had 6.5 sacks last year. So between both those guys, and then also, too, they brought in Henry Nelson, a former Pro Bowl defensive tackle. He had a history with Lovie Smith, and he was in Dallas most recently. But, you know, they're hoping all those guys, hoping that Henry, Gerald McCoy, and Clint McDonald can have a little bit of a rotation there. And the idea with that is to be able to keep Gerald fresh. So when that fourth quarter rolls around, and really all those guys, when that fourth quarter rolls around, you know, he can really be that all-pro caliber player. But, you know, aside from that, you know, really just putting all those guys in position to be able to make plays on the ball, you know, forcing those turnovers, being more of that type of Lovie Smith defense that they had up in Chicago. But, you know, still a lot of question marks there.
Jenna, before we let you go, curious, you know, obviously fireworks affected this organization as well as the one that you cover, the Bucs. C.J. Wilson, unfortunately, involved in a fireworks incident on 4th of July as well. What's the latest with him? What do you know? And where does that situation stand?
Well, gosh, I mean, talk about freak accidents. And I'll tell you what, too, this market, you know, this our radio station is the home of USF football. So there's a lot of concerned folks here about JPP, and certainly our thoughts and prayers are with him and hoping for the best with him. I just can't imagine, you know, what it's been like for both of those guys in those situations. But, you know, it's very similar to the Giants approach in that, you know, the number one concern obviously is health. You know, with CJ, a little bit different type of accident, and exploded in his hand. I know we're still waiting for the details from JPP as to how all that happened, but, you know, based on what I'm hearing, or the way it looks at least, you know, maybe he's going to be on the non-football injury list. I haven't heard a specific timetable as far as recovery, but, you know, the good news is, though, is that he's out of the hospital and he seems to be in pretty good spirits. But, you know, he's not the marquee type of guy like JPP. He wasn't poised to make a big contract. He was going to have to work his tail off just to be on the roster this year, much in the way he did last year. So he's got a real tall task ahead of him. You know, I've even talked to some folks who have played cornerback in the league, and granted, they told me I've never played without two fingers, so I can't really tell you what it's going to be like. But, you know, I've been told that, yeah, you know, jamming guys at the line of scrimmage, it's not that difficult. Even jump ball situations, not that difficult, maybe, if you don't have two fingers. They seem to think that JPP, you know, given the leverage and things like that at the line of scrimmage, that might be more difficult for him. So, but, you know, we're just going to have to see. But, you know, maybe non-football injury list for him. But, again, the emphasis is really on just, you know, getting him back to full health.
Well, Janet, greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much.
Really quick before you go, Jenna, I thought it was pretty interesting. You actually know George Selvey extremely well, you and your family. The Giants fans are going to have an opportunity this season to get to know him. Before we let you go, kind of give us some tidbits, some nuggets on George Selvey.
Well, you know what? I went to USF just like you. I was actually a cheerleader there when he was there. And, you know, first of all, fans are going to love him in terms of just what an approachable guy he is. He's fun. I mean, he goes to pro wrestling events. He dresses up in Ninja Turtle pajamas, just like his son. He's probably going to kill me for saying that. But just a really fun-loving guy. You know, he played opposite JPP at USF. And, you know, the one thing I would say about George is, does he have the natural freakish athleticism that you saw from JPP? Few people do. But that is a guy, and Rod Marinelli called him this in Dallas, that is a guy who's the bricklayer. He comes to work every day and has that mentality of, I'm going to give it everything I have. George will even tell you he's not naturally maybe the most gifted athlete, but he continues to work at it. And that's something that I know the fans in Dallas really came to appreciate. I know a lot of Bucs fans were hoping that they'd go after him this off season, but I really think in terms of, especially with New York, I know that there's been an emphasis on trying to get that pass rush back to the way it was. He's one of those guys, again, you know, can you use him on every single play? Well, that's debatable. You know, I don't know if he's going to be necessarily that starting guy. It depends on how they want to use him, but I do know that he goes in every day and he gives it everything he has. I also know, too, that my parents, for what this is worth, they absolutely adore him. He's one of their favorite people on the planet.
Awesome.
So, I mean, then they go back, of course, to the USF days. They were fans of him then, and, you know, we became pretty good friends back in the USF days. But, you know, I certainly am rooting for him. I wish all the best for him, and hopefully you guys get a chance to meet him, too, because I think they'll really like him.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Sounds good, Jenna. Greatly appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thanks a bunch.
Jenna Lane, who covers the Bucs for
Knows
Sports
her stuff.
Talk Florida, 1040 AM.
I feel a little intimidated.
About what?
About, you know, I think it's just really cool when you come across women in the industry who really know football, get football, understand it, can digest it, can communicate it right, properly. Like, I just think it's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Some great stuff out of her in terms of the makeup of the Bucs and what to expect for their upcoming season in terms of them trying to transform their offense. They have a new offensive coordinator. Leslie Frazier is their defensive coordinator. They've had some injuries on defense. They brought in some new free agents. They only had 2 wins last season, tied for the worst record in the National Football League with Tennessee. It was a division that we've talked about a great deal this week because we also covered the Saints. That was all under 500, but I'm expecting a bounce-back campaign for that entire division. I even think Tampa Bay will be much more competitive, at least in terms of their defense, I think.
A rookie quarterback that's so many question marks about going number one overall?
Well, I like their defense. I think that they've brought in some depth, and I think that they should be a little bit more consistent. And he's got good receivers around him. Remember, those two receivers were productive, even with inconsistency at quarterback last season. So I expect the team to be more competitive. I'm not saying they're going to go from 2 wins to 10, but I think they're going to be a tough team that you're going to have to not necessarily overlook every time you have them on the schedule.
I'm really intrigued to see how Jameis Winston performs in the NFL. You know, in hearing a lot of the scouts and the analysts, the big reason why the Bucs took Jameis Winston is because they felt that his talent would transcend, there would be less of a learning curve for him over Marcus making his way into the NFL. Everything we're hearing out of Marcus as well in Tennessee has been tremendous. So, you know, there really wasn't much of, is Jameis the better quarterback? Not necessarily. The two were kind of even keel. What the advantage was for Jameis was the offense and the way that what he played with Jimbo Fisher at FSU would transcend and translate to the NFL a lot quicker, that it would be a much larger learning curve for Marcus. So I'm really intrigued and interested in that storyline to see if that's really accurate.
Well, I mean, the advantage Jameis Winston has is I think he's surrounded by a little bit more better talent. So that should hopefully help his cause. And as you mentioned, he did also work in a collegiate system that is a better transition to the NFL as opposed to what Marcus has to deal with in Tennessee, where his Oregon system was not necessarily similar to what Ken Wisenhunt has in store with the Titans. We'll get into more about the New York Giants as well as more about perhaps some of their opponents, but we want to try to head back to the phone lines here. I know a number of people waiting on the phones patiently. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat. Vince is in Troy, New York. Vince, what's happening?
Hey, hello, guys. How you doing?
Great. Well, Vince, how's everything with you?
Everything's good, but I got one question, okay? What's with McAdoo running 80% of the time on first down? If I was playing against the Giants, I would always play the first down as a run. Mix it up. You got a load of people, weapons this year. Pass, pass, pass.
Well, I mean, keep in mind there were a number of injuries last season. I don't have the numbers in front of me. I'm taking your word for it that it was 80% of the time. But I have nothing in front of me that confirms that your percentage is 100%. But we'll go with that number for the time being. You know, this season, assuming everybody's healthy and you're expecting the running game to improve, I think there is going to be that much more versatility. Keep in mind, last year was the first year under that offense. So not just McAdoo was getting used to the players were getting used to the system. So they weren't necessarily going to showcase everything and dig that deep into the box of creativity. I think this season, with Eli that much more comfortable, he's fully healthy. He is not undergoing surgery like he did last season. You have a variety of different running backs. You know, they could certainly get a little bit more creative on first down because they have more players that they can turn to, more options.
Well, I hope so because I used to go crazy last year.
Well, the running game as a whole, Vince, I mean, the numbers prove that. It was very up and down. You know, whether it be first down, second down, third down. They want to be a better running team on all downs. It has nothing to do necessarily with first down. They want to be able to pick up a first down, do damage, and move the chains, no matter who's in the backfield, no matter what down. So I think that's the goal this season, to be more consistent, not necessarily worry about should we run it on first down, should we run it on second down. You know, you want to pick up positive yardage on first down so that you're not in second and longs and you're not in third and longs. And if you can't pick up positive chunks of yardage on first down, whether it be through short passes or on the ground, you're going to put yourself in a very precarious situation on the later downs. That's been well documented, especially last season.
Yeah, but how many times last year did we have third and 10? because we didn't gain any yardage on the first two downs. We would run, pass, and then we'd have to pass on third. And everybody knows what the hell they're going to do on third down when they're third and 10.
Well, I mean, listen, hopefully there's much new talent on this roster this year. I think the addition of Shane Vereen, I think, will be exciting. Maybe they come to the line of scrimmage with a formation if they're going to run, but then they have Shane Vereen back there, so maybe it's going to be a passing play majority of the time. Who knows? I mean, I think this year is much different with expecting a healthy Victor Cruz back into the equation. You know, I think this year could be very different. I would just be a little bit more optimistic and a little bit more open-minded that maybe this year is going to be a little different than last.
Well, I'll tell you, I picked the Giants to be 10-6 this year.
Well,
we're going to get to the playoffs.
They're going to need to. They're going to need to. My opinion, and tell me if you think I'm wrong here, I think hands down you have to win 10 games to get to the playoffs in this division this year.
Well, yes,
I don't think 9 gets you in.
It's going to be tough.
No, I mean, could be 11.
We're going to beat those Devils in Dallas.
Well, that's the best
thank
way
you.
To help win the division, Vince.
Thank
and appreciate
you.
The phone
thank
call.
Thank you for your call.
Not just Dallas, the Redskins,
the
and
Devils.
Eagles.
He called them the Devils.
Yes, he did call them the Devils.
They're actually the Cowboys, but we understood what he meant.
Correct. The rivalry, we understand.
Right, right.
Yes. Not necessarily want to pat a division rival on the back, so I'm sure everybody's got a nickname or two for those respective teams. 10 wins, I think you have to pencil in. It could be 11, though.
I think it really depends
on how things play out in this division. The one thing I will say, and I brought this up time and time again, the last time there were back-to-back divisional winners was 03 and 04, and that was the Philadelphia Eagles. So the one trend that you can point to is every single year it's a different team, which bodes well for the Giants considering they haven't won the division in some time. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're in a better position than any other team.
You know, it's interesting. You know, the fact that they have to play Atlanta, Carolina, Tampa Bay, and
New Orleans,
because they were the worst division in all of the NFL last year. Well, yay, kudos to the Giants. But we've been sitting here, we've been breaking down these opponents, and we're anticipating, you just said, you expect Tampa to be better. I expect the Saints to be better. Obviously, we all expect Atlanta to be better. I think Carolina. So, yeah, it's going to be, hopefully it'll be a more competitive, entertaining division for NFL fans. And then when you look at New England, Miami, Buffalo, and the Jets, my goodness, not so hot for the Giants or the division, because in my opinion, that very well could be one of the most competitive divisions in all of football. I know it's always been about the past few years it's been about the NFC West. I think this year that division could really compete with the NFC West as one of the most competitive divisions, because you look at what the Miami Dolphins have done. I think they've improved tremendously. Granted, yes, where we stand right now, no Tom Brady for 4 games. My gut's telling me that suspension is going to be knocked down to 2, but still, once Tom Brady gets back, New England will be New England. I think the Jets obviously have gotten better. Their biggest issue is the quarterback position, but I think their defense can arguably be one of the best, if not compete with the Seattle Seahawks as the best defense in the NFL. And then with Rex in Buffalo, man, watch out for that team. So, you know, in one instance, you got to like the division that the Giants and the NFC East are playing. But then in another, I think it's going to be very, very difficult. So I think it's going to be a really competitive year. I'll be honest with you. There's no cakewalk team here. When you're looking through the matchups.
Well, as you mentioned, I mean, the NFC South struggled last season, but it's a completely different season. All of those teams made changes, so you can't necessarily put stock in what happened last season. Even the two teams that the Giants are facing that finished in the same spot that they did in their respective divisions, the Vikings, who I think are going to be vastly improved now that Adrian Peterson's back.
In San Francisco.
Mike Zimmer's done a good job in the Niners.
You know, let me tell you something. I love me some Teddy B. I love Teddy Bridgewater. I think this is the year for him. I think he's really going to become a household name, and I think he's really going to explode onto the scene. The fact that Adrian Peterson's in that backfield is going to help him. I think both these guys are going to help each other. I think the fact that Adrian Peterson's in the backfield is going to help Teddy B in regard to defensive and defensive schemes. A lot of times towards the end of the season, folks don't know this. I want to say that he put up, right? His QB rating was one of the best the last 4 weeks of the season.
Well, he had a solid rookie season overall.
Yeah, but the last 4 weeks, I mean, he totally crushed it. And I'm sure he's hoping to pick up where he left off. Norv Turner is his offensive coordinator. I think they're going to utilize Adrian Peterson, the passing game, a lot more this season. And then, I mean, San Francisco, you just – and look at who would have thunk this, that looking at this schedule, that you're looking at San Francisco going, wow, that's an easy win.
Well, I don't think there's any easy win when it comes to the schedule. I mean, listen, the Giants, based on their history.
There was a Lance, there was a mass exodus of players for San Francisco. I'm saying, in looking at the schedule, the one game that stands out that you're like, oh, yeah, for sure, W. If you had to go like WL, WL, LL, WWW, whatever, like out of all these, I'm looking at San Francisco at home. Oh, yeah, that's a W.
I think that they certainly take a hit with some of the players they lost, but Kaepernick has a few more weapons now around him. Mm-hmm. And I like the depth on defense, regardless of whether or not they're proven commodities. San Francisco has drafted well over the last few seasons. It would not surprise me if somebody steps up this
season. I think they've done that
in the last few years.
I think it's a bad year for San Francisco.
I'm not guaranteeing you that they're going to make the playoffs, but I don't think that it's a gimme that they're a walk in the park, I'll tell you that.
Okay.
I mean, they're still a dangerous defensive team. They've got some guys that are coming back to full health, and they have some young guys that they drafted over the last few years. You know, everybody talks about Chris Borland. Michael Wilhoit was a similar young guy, too, that came in, and nobody ever heard of him before last season.
Okay.
So they got a good track record in that department.
You feel pretty confident?
Well, okay. I think the way that the parity is played out in this league, Anita, I don't think that you can look at last season and then look at a guy leaving or two and automatically assume that this team is bad right away.
It wasn't just a guy or two. I mean, it was a mass exodus of guys.
Colin Kaepernick, to me,
still undecided, jury's still out with him. I mean, he is not, this really has to be the year for him with me. And you talk about the added talent, Torrey Smith to me is not a number one wide receiver in the NFL, I'm sorry. And Vernon Davis, what happened to him last year? He totally disappeared off the face of the earth. So he's going into this season with Torrey Smith, who to me is not a number one. I think he's a good number two on any roster. He's getting paid number one money. Anquan Boldin's getting up there in years. He's more of a possession wide receiver. Vernon Davis, will he rejoin the crew and make an appearance at least once in one game this season? Only time will tell. They lose Frank Gore. Yes, Carlos Hyde, still unproven. Can he carry the load? They have Reggie Bush. He's old. I don't know. They lost so much talent on defense. So, I don't know. I mean, you're right. We won't know. We won't know until that October 11th game. But I'm just saying, I'm looking at the schedule, and for me, I'm looking at that San Francisco game as a definite W. Out of all the games there, San Francisco, definite W. Tampa, I'd say Tampa as well.
201-939-4513. Let's head back to the phone lines. Ravon is in Stafford, Virginia. Ravon, what's happening?
Hey, good afternoon, Lance and Anita.
Hey.
Good afternoon to you. What's on your mind?
All right. Good. I'm actually calling today to talk about Dwayne Harris and the importance of Dwayne Harris.
Sure.
There's been a lot of fans that said a lot about his contract and so forth. I think he's going to be very important simply because of the fact that the guy's going to be playing three positions, maybe even four, as far as punt return, kickoff return, wide receiver. The importance of him basically is because I have no question about our offense, barring, injuries and everything. I like us going into the second year of the offense, but our defense as a whole, not, specific positions, but our defense as a whole has been a question. So with that said, the importance of special teams and them overloading on special teams, I think, was specifically because of that. And the field position is going to be important. Is going to keep Odell Beckham from having to play special teams as far as kickoff and punt return. You want to keep him out of those situations. What you guys think about that?
Well, I think that was part of the reason why they brought in Dwayne Harris, but they're also looking to get back what a guy like Dominic Hickson provided for this team a few years ago, that dynamic return guy. And as you mentioned, Dwayne Harris is going to play on all four special teams. He's going to be on both coverage units, and he can return punts and kickoffs. So, you invest in a player, you're not just going to dangle him out there two times a game. You're going to use him all across the board, and he has value as a wide receiver. So I think that's why they valued him very high this offseason, and they're looking for that spark on special teams. You're right, they're looking to get better in terms of excelling in field position and shortening the field for Eli Manning and not putting an immense amount of pressure on the defense. That could do wonders for the other two facets of the team. But remember, you know, Odell Beckham, at the end of the day, he may see some time on special teams here or there. I don't think that he's been completely eliminated from the picture. Right. Antonio Brown for the Pittsburgh Steelers, he's one of their main return guys. We don't see it across the landscape of the NFL, but I think if they have a situation where, you know, they feel Beckham can all of a sudden accelerate and give them a burst, I would not be surprised if, you know, he gets a return or two over the course of the season. I wouldn't necessarily cancel that out.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, but you eliminate so many possibilities of having him out there all of the time, basically. And, you know, I agree with the sign, and I agree with a lot of the signings because I knew they were going after special teams because the only reason why I think that our defense was as bad as it was last year was for two reasons. Number one was injuries. And number two, to me, it was Prairie Fuel. You know, as a Giants fan, I remember playing against Seattle, and we're watching the naked bootleg, and I'm watching it on TV. They flick the screen to Prairie Fuel, and he's got a smile on his face. I'm like, oh, he's got to go. He's got to go. At that moment, as a Giants fan, I knew he had to go. Now, having Spags back with the schemes and creative ways of getting linebackers, I don't think I've seen a linebacker sack a quarterback when Prairie Fuel was I'm exaggerating.
Well, Devon Kennard had a number of sacks last season. Let's not forget about that. He was up there.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I'm exaggerating. But like I said, it just didn't look too good. I've seen a lot of plays where, you know, we're in defense and we need to stop. I've seen teams complete third and 16s on us. You know, throw a pass to a wide receiver. Nobody's even around him to contest him. It's pitching, you know, just throw it to him. He's open. He goes down. It was kind of sad. So I look forward to this year, and I appreciate y'all taking my comments and my questions, and thank you very much.
Well, thanks so much for calling in. Appreciate it. And they have a new defensive philosophy this season. Yeah, that was part of the reason why they made a change, and they brought in some new younger players. They have some guys returning from full health, from injuries rather. So, you know, you hope that that mix obviously improves the group as a whole. Let's head back to the phone lines. You want to add something?
Yeah, I do. I personally do not want to see Odell Beckham Jr. on special teams at all. And I'm sure that he's going to be lobbying because he loves it. It's what he likes to do. He wants to return one, take one to the house, and then do his, like, dance or whatever. No. I personally, no thank you.
I mean, if they gave him one or two looks throughout the season, I wouldn't necessarily be surprised by that.
I'm not saying to be surprised.
But Dwayne Harris, I think, is going to be the main guy.
I'm just saying, I have no.
Well, the injury argument is the main argument. That's the main argument.
No.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Because you want to keep him healthy. And I don't think that that's an illogical
Yes. No.
But it wouldn't surprise me, as I said, if he may get a look or two. Because most teams, even when they have their primary return guys, rotate a little just to give the defenses and special teams different looks.
But the Giants have so many issues when it comes to injuries. Why risk it?
Well, I always say that a guy could get hurt at any time, regardless of whether you expose him on special teams, on offense, on defense. I really don't think that you have to save yourself.
Special teams is different. You know what I mean? Like, special teams is like, especially on kick and punt return, like, you know, the idea is to go down and, like, decapitate somebody.
Well, but they
like,
changed just, the rules to avoid that, though.
It's
keep
just,
that in mind.
It's different. You know, especially, you know, you're going after the guy who's trying to return a kick or punt for a touchdown. You know, there's just a lot riding on that. I just would rather not see him. I'm sure that it's something he wants to continue to do because he enjoys doing it so much.
Well, he's been on the record saying that, too.
Yeah.
That's why I wouldn't be surprised if he at least tries to win one battle. But Dwayne Harris was brought in here for the main reason of being the main return guy. And barring injury, he's going to get the majority of the opportunities. Nick is in Hackensack. Nick, what's happening?
Yes, how you doing? I'm Nick from Hackensack.
Glad to have you aboard, Nick. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing? This is a little bit off topic. I'm an avid Giants fan. I've been following Giants since 85, 86. But I'd like to ask a question, especially with one of your female hosts that you're having. I know that this is not a Giants question, but Serena Williams, you know she's heading for her fourth Grand Slam in a row to have the calendar Grand Slam. She won. Since the U.S. Open in last September, she won, like, the U.S. Open, then she won the Australian Open, French Open, and she just won Wimbledon, and she's heading towards New York.
Yeah, actually, just to correct you, she's going for her fifth straight Grand Slam, but yes, her first calendar year hasn't happened since 1988 with Steffi Graf.
Exactly.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering, why is she getting a little bit more publicity on this other than, you know, the occasional advertisement or whatever? This is like an American icon, one of the greatest sports persona in the United States. And it seems like it's just like a misprint every time her name is mentioned.
Yeah, I'm. Thank you for the phone call. I really do appreciate it. You know, it baffles me as well. I host a sports talk radio show, and on Sunday, I kind of made the comment, like, regardless of gender, do you feel that Serena Williams is the best athlete of our generation? And I just got destroyed. Like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I'm not talking about, like, Serena going one-on-one against LeBron James that she would beat him. Of course that's not what I'm saying. But if you take them in their selective sport and what they've been able to accomplish, it's amazing. I mean, she is the ultimate closer. She is the ultimate dominator. Her serves are 125 to 127 miles per hour consistently. Dudes can't even do that. So it's fascinating to me. It's amazing to me. I don't understand it. And with all due respect to Ronda Rousey, who won Best Female Athlete at the ESPYs last night, to me, they got that wrong. I don't know how you could not have given it to Serena Williams. And not that Rousey isn't deserving. She absolutely is. But it is. It's amazing to me. And the calendar year is going to take place in our own backyard here at the U.S. Open. Like, and there's not even, granted, it's not going to take place until September. And by the way, September 12th is the date you want to mark. That is the women's championship. It's a Saturday morning. But it's amazing to me that there's not more buzz, more excitement. Calendar year, Lance, hasn't been done since 1988. And if Serena comes to New York and she's performed well here and she, like, you know, kicks butt and takes names throughout, I mean, and to complete that here in New York City, I think it'd be tremendous. But the caller is right. There's just not a lot of buzz when it comes to Serena Williams, and I don't get it. I don't understand why.
Well, I think part of it is she's dominated her respective sport, and she hasn't really had a big threat. When you have a rivalry or a threat, I think that brings more pizzazz and more excitement to the sport and the storylines. And it's not necessarily against her. It's just nobody else has been able to actually pose a consistent threat, and that, I think, takes away partially from perhaps some of the exposure that she would get on a national scene. Let's close up the show with another phone call here. Marco is in Connecticut. Marco, what's happening?
Hey, Lance and Anita, how are you?
Doing well, Marco. What do you have for us?
Okay, I was listening in, and I wanted to call on that last point about Beckham, you know, if we're going to see him returning kicks at all. And I understand Anita's point about keeping him as healthy as we can. I think it's similar to what Dallas and Philadelphia has done the last few years, where you don't see it too much anymore with Dallas, but they would bring Dez Bryant in the fourth quarter if needed a spark, or if, you know, depending on what the situation was, and Philly would do it with DeSean Jackson.
Correct.
I think it's always a possibility, and it's the flexibility that Beckham gives the special teams unit. And I think it's possible.
I would agree with you, and that was the point that I was bringing up, Marco. Under those circumstances, when you do need a spark, it's a late-game situation, you don't have to do it every single game, but the fact that he's on the roster, I think that you at least consider that an option. That doesn't mean, though, that it becomes a religious game plan for you each and every week.
I agree. And just to wrap this up about Beckham and his injury, I saw last night, I was happy he received the award for the catch, and that really puts the mark on what was an awesome, awesome rookie year for him. In limited practice time last year, considering what he was able to do, this really doesn't help my point, but I'm going to make it anyways. I really hope day one of training camp, he's out there. I don't know what happened in minicamp. I know there was a hamstring injury. Coach Coughlin talked about it, that there's an issue there, that they're trying to get through it. Clearly, there's an issue. Listen, I respect everything these guys do in the offseason, and Beckham is getting pulled probably in every direction because he's so marketable. But if he is injured, okay, I don't need to see one of our franchise players throwing out pitches, dunking basketballs, catching passes upside down. I need you to be healthy for 16 and hopefully more games when this season starts. And that is the most important thing. And you know the coaches and ownership feel the same exact way. So when training camp starts, that's something I'm going to be keeping my eye on. Thanks, guys.
You got it, Marco. Appreciate the phone call. And the goal is to have him ready for training camp. Remember, it was the other hamstring. This was not the same injury that he had to deal with last offseason.
Yeah, but I understand what he's saying, and I this isn't the first time I've heard this from Giants fans. You know, Odell Beckham Jr. has had a very, very busy offseason. And on top of that, in regard to, like, Instagram and Vine and all these social media outlets, you're seeing him dunk basketballs. You're seeing him pitch 100 miles an hour fastballs. You're seeing him do all kinds of really, really fantastic athletic things that just make you go, wow. So I can understand Giants fans sitting back and going, well, wait a minute. Like, he didn't participate in minicamp. He sat out a few OTAs, what have you. Like, how's he able to do all this? But not, you know, it's just, understand football is a much different sport, you know. That's number one. But number two, I think because of all the off-season hoopla and excitement and what a lot of Giants fans have seen, I think that there's an even heftier expectation coming into this year that, you know what, be ready day one of training camp. And if he's not, I think he might get some heat from Giants fans. Again, based on the reaction that I have received.
Well, we'll wait and see what happens in terms of the start of training camp. But the Giants, at least, are under the impression that he's going to be ready to go, because the only reason they held him out was because it was a precautionary.
They just
didn't want him to re-aggravate something.
I don't doubt.
Pull it during the middle of the off season when it's not that integral in terms of obviously getting you on the field.
I'll be honest, I have no doubt that Odell's going to be ready to rock and roll day one of training camp. I really don't. I'll be pretty surprised if he's not.
So with that being said, that'll wrap up the show today.
No show tomorrow,
correct. But we will be back up and running on Monday, noon Eastern, each and every day for Big Blue Kickoff Live. We'll continue to preview all the regular season matchups, so stay tuned for that. And we'll continue to take your phone calls as well as your tweets. You can continue to interact on hashtag Giants Chat. For Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow. Have an extended, enjoyable weekend. We'll speak to you next week.
All right, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
Got to the field. He's got through. 35, 30.